RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Landry Football Podcast for this Thursday, November 14th, as we talk all things football here every Tuesday and Thursday. I want to thank the fine folks at Radio Influence that produce this podcast, get this out to you. A reminder, if you've got someone that you think might be interested in promoting their products on this podcast, give us a ring. Go to LandryFootball.com, hit contact Chris, and we'll get you in touch with the right folks there. So we want to get into a few things. Obviously, going into week 12 in college football, week 11 in the NFL, it's the opposite, 1 week behind, a lot of key games, but want to focus on a couple of things that you got a couple of questions that were brought up, but I wanted to get into a little bit of it follows up really a question that was brought up about RPOs, run-pass options, and maybe a little bit of a confusion out there about what is an RPO. You hear a lot of talk on TV. A lot of times the announcers are talking about an RPO, and it's really not an RPO. So I thought this would be a good time to explain a little bit. We do a lot of this in the offseason, but I think it's relevant as much as possible to get into some of the conversations as it relates to the X's and O's and, you know, as the games are taking place during this time of year. So I want to get into that. And the first thing that you need to know about RPOs, and again, it's called run pass option. It has a pass concept built into it. So the quarterback makes a pre-snap read or a post-snap read on a defender that the offense doesn't block. The theory behind the RPO is to read the extra defender in the box rather than blocking him. If the offense had five blockers and there are six defenders in the box, the quarterback would read the sixth defender. Be an end, it could be a linebacker, it could be a safety. A play-action pass is different. A play-action pass is a play in which the offense will fake a run to get defenders to step up and then throw a pass. So there's a difference. And very often you hear a lot of an RPO, it's really just a play action. So they mistakenly call every shotgun play with a fake run action an RPO, where it just, again, could simply be a play action pass. So how can you tell the difference between a regular pass play and an RPO? And it's to watch the offensive line. That is the key. If the offensive line isn't aggressively getting to the second level, it's a play action. The lineman might even initially take a few steps like they are run blocking before stopping at the line of scrimmage. If they get downfield on a pass play, you know it's an RPO. It is illegal for a lineman who is usually an ineligible receiver to be more than 1 yard downfield of the line of scrimmage without making contact with an opponent. So, and it's a gray area with referees who don't make this call often. Offensive coaches don't mind, but this is very much a bone of contention for defensive coaches. So I think it's important to understand that in the rage of the RPOs, understanding what it actually is, and it is can be a little confusing, and I don't want to be overly critical of analysts on TV because it's happened really fast. You got to make an adjustment. But, you know, the key thing, and I know it was gosh, it was, I think, the where it really became in play. It was the Eagles Super Bowl against the Patriots, where they were talking RPO, RPO, and Collinsworth was talking about it left and right. And 90% of those were play actions. Just, you know, play action in a shotgun looks a lot like the RPO. Now you know the difference. Watch the offensive line. It'll break it down. It's kind of like, you know, a couple of things we talk about in some of the RPOs, and we'll get into this when planning on it. But like the difference between a bubble screen and a true screen. So a true screen pass is a play in which a quarterback will take a drop back, invite the pass rush to go after him. Offensive linemen will block for a couple of seconds before letting the pass rushers beat them and then release downfield to block. The idea behind a true screen is to draw the rushers in, throw the ball over their heads, and then get a convoy of offensive linemen ahead of the ball carrier. That's a true screen. Okay, but not all true screens are bubble screens. A bubble screen is one in which the ball is immediately thrown to the perimeter. Only skill position players block the bubble screen play, and offensive linemen are uninvolved in the actual bubble screen. Bubble screen are often used as the pass option as part of the RPOs. So you read the defender, hand it off, or you go immediately into a bubble screen. So that's the difference between the two. You'll get that a lot. A lot of times, you know, people throw out bubble screens. Well, it's really not a bubble screen. So don't get mad or don't think that, man, they're calling too many bubble screens. They live on that too much. Because the play is bubble screen is an option and is being thrown because the offense has a numbers advantage. So it's like the option. It's like saying, well, they're running the option. They're giving the fullback too much or pitching it too much. Well, no, they're not. It's the read of how the defense is playing and where you got the numbers advantage. So don't think that there are too many bubble screens because it's not an actual called bubble screen. It is an RPO with a bubble screen built into it. And that's the difference. You know, another thing that comes up a lot is motions and shifts and things and, you know, why you want to move guys and get them in motion. Well, the purpose of a motion and shift, they're a multitude of reasons, but a shift, first of all, versus a motion, they're two different things. We say shifts and motions, and people throw that out. It sounds good. You know what it is? A shift is when multiple players move and get set before the ball is snapped. Shifts are usually used to quickly change the formation so the defense doesn't have a lot of time to adjust to it. A motion is when a player is still moving before the snap. By rule, only one player is allowed to be in motion before the snap. Okay, why do you do it? What's the purpose of it? Well, there are a number of reasons. One, early in the game, play callers will use a lot of motion to see how a defense is going to respond. They might be able to take advantage of that knowledge, of that info, that intel later in the game. Secondly, motion gives quarterback some information. For example, if a defender follows the motion man across the formation, they know that the defense is in man coverage. So it's part of a pre-snap indicator. It's the best pre-snap indicator, quite frankly. And then thirdly, the offenses could outflank defenders with a fly motion or threaten to outflank them, which forces them to react. So it gives them an advantage, an alignment advantage, an angle advantage from a blocking standpoint. And because motions happen right before the snap, defenders have to quickly communicate changes in a small time window, which can cause a lot of lapse and get guys out of position. And that's what you want to do, get them out of position. Well, get them out of position is often dictated by what you do from a formation standpoint. Motion doesn't allow the defense to stay set and settle mentally. So you hear a lot of this about, well, boy, they're making too many mental mistakes. Well, you made more mental mistakes in this game because the offense was more clever and more capable of causing you some problems and consternation in your setup. So I think that is a really key to understand. We'll get into some other things too that I think are relevant. You know, for example, zone coverage and pattern matching. You hear a lot of that talked about. So classic zone coverage is when defenders are responsible for areas of the field. They'll drop into those areas while keeping their eyes on the quarterback, and you react to the ball. Pattern match is an umbrella term that could refer to a zone match or a man match. In a zone match coverage, defenders drop to an area but are eyeing receivers and reacting accordingly. Their drops and movement changes are based on route distribution. So you've got in match coverage, defenders are reading receivers and will eventually lock on man-to-man with receivers according to the reads after their route distribution. So it's being able to read, seeing where the routes go, and reacting to it. You know, the other thing that I get a lot is you hear people say, oh, they threw it in a double coverage, triple coverage. That's a bad throw. It's not real accurate. Football is a game in which if you don't study film, you don't know how to look at film, you're going to get a lot of false information from watching a game live on TV or in person. So you often hear that. Boy, throw in a double or triple coverage. And it might look correct because when the camera catches up with the throw, you got multiple defenders around the ball. But if you watch closely and look at the tape, the coaching tape, most of the time it's just a secondary converging on the ball after it's thrown. A true double team is a defensive call. You can tell a true double team by the alignment of the defensive backs. You can see two defensive backs lining up on a receiver. A more common example is if a safety is heavily tilted toward the receiver before the snap and he gets his eyes on the receiver post snap. These are things you can see on tape, but on TV you don't see it. If you don't see a safety cheating over to that side of the field, you don't see two guys in one over one receiver, then they're not being double covered. What you're seeing is the tail end of a play in which guys are converging on the ball. So I think those things are really important to keep in mind. A couple of other tips that I think are useful. You hear this, the quarterback looked off to the defender. Well, they're not always doing that. Quarterbacks will stare down deep safeties or give up what we call a purposeful look in a different direction in order to get them to move because the zone defenders are going to react to the quarterback's eyes. So if a team is playing in zone, you'll want to look off. But just because a quarterback looks elsewhere before eventually getting to his target doesn't mean he's looking off the defender. He just could be going through his progressions. So if it's a well-designed play concept, his progression should have a similar effect to a look-off. It's kind of like play action if you think about it. If you make the handoff look like it's a run, then the play action's going to look a lot better than if you're very sloppy with it. You don't have good ball handling skills. Well, if you go through your progressions correctly, depending upon the coverage, you will look off of one and go to another. So route combinations are designed so that if one route is covered, another should open up. So sometimes they're looking off. Sometimes they're just going through their progression. So keep that in mind. You know, when you watch TV, the camera angles are not really good. They favor tight camera angles and zoomed in coverage. And the problem when you got 22 players, you're missing half the story because you're not seeing the things that are truly relevant to the play. So, you know, if you're at a live game or you can get the right angle on TV, look for where, as I like to say, where the grass is. Watch the linebackers. It gives you a little bit of a feel for where the openings are and where the attackable areas are offensively. So are they spread out with big gaps? We call big gaps between the two linemen bubbles inside. Is anyone covering the slot receiver? Chances are that whatever you see is the same thing the quarterback and the offensive coordinator sees. So you'll be amazed how often the ball goes to that part of the field. So, you know, look at that before the snap. I don't care how much you try to explain to people, don't focus on the ball, focus on away from the ball. If you focus away from the ball, it'll tell you where the ball is going to go or where the ball should go. It also shows you how good defenses can show open areas and then close it up fast. Then once the ball is snapped, you can watch it as normal, just as a more informed fan. So you know, instead of telling somebody don't follow the ball, you know, if you're going to follow the ball, before the snap, don't follow the ball. Find out where the gaps of the bubbles are. Find out who's covering the slot. Okay, and when you see that, see where the open spot is on the grass, that's where the ball is likely to go. And again, good defenses can show that open area and converge on it. So, you know, you've heard me talk about it. I think there are other things you can do to improve your game watching. You know, what personnel group is on the field, for example. I think you got to pay attention, you know, to the offensive personnel in the game. You know, how many backs, how many receivers, how many tight ends. Is there a single high defense with one safety in the middle of the field, or is the middle of the field open because there are two deep safeties? You know, then those things. We're going to get into that a little bit more from a viewpoint of a quarterback and how that might help you break down the game a little bit better. But I want to answer a couple of questions. We'll talk a little bit about some of the games this weekend before we head on out. But Rock asks, Bob Davey attained modest success in a couple of bowls at New Mexico before player abuse charges. Is that part of the regression there because he had to tone it down a little bit? You know, I'm not sure. I think maybe a little bit. I think what had happened is it kind of affected maybe a little bit in recruiting, and I think that it probably had some effect. It's a good point. But he's also had some health issues as well. I think that's a very valid point, and I don't know the answer. I don't know. I haven't been to one of his practices since he's been at New Mexico, so I really don't know what he's doing, how he's doing. But that could very well be the case. Rock also asked about Big 12 star quarterbacks of the past, Michael Bishop, Corby Jones, Tommy Frazier. Did they get any feelers from the NFL, and why did such quarterbacks never make it to the next level? Yeah, they did. They all did. The guy that got the most play was Michael Bishop, who was with the Patriots for a while. The reason they never made it is none of them were good enough passers. Both the guys were very athletic, but neither one of those guys were very accurate. And look, we're seeing guys that are mobile, and you think, well, could they be? And this may be where you're going, Rock. I don't know that you are, but you look at Lamar Jackson. You look at Russell Wilson doing his thing. You look, hey, guys are moving. Why haven't done those before? Look, if you can't throw it accurately, you're going to have a hard time making it. And a lot of those guys that were really athletic weren't really good passers. Well, we're seeing more and more, and it has to do with the 7-on-7 game and all the work that's done all year round. Quarterbacks are becoming better passers. They're becoming more accurate. And if they're also athletic, they learn how to use it. They're better trained. You know, in the past, athletic quarterbacks relied on the athletic ability. And the passing skill was secondary. In more of a running game, that was very functional and usable. In today's world, you got to be able to throw it accurately. Even a screen pass has to be thrown accurately and on time if it's going to work. So what you're seeing more and more is quarterbacks are developing their passing skills. And if they have athletic ability, they can use it to their advantage. Meaning, look, you go through a progression, and if it's not there, you can run or throw the ball away. Well, running is better if you can do it and pick up positive yards. But you've got to be able to make plays in the passing game by throwing it. If you can't, you're going to be limited. And so what we're seeing is a better job of guys being able to throw it accurately and not using their running ability as a crutch, but using it as an outlet if things break down or an outlet to extend a play. And I think we're seeing more and more of that. And I think we're going to see it more so going forward. But the real key in the differences, even between the short period of the guys that you mentioned in today's game, is that the quarterback play, the development, and the 7-on-7s are greatly progressing the passing skills of quarterbacks, even the athletic ones. And I think that combination can be quite intriguing. Now, I still think that the perfect quarterback, if I was going to make the perfect quarterback physically, it would probably be somebody like an Aaron Rodgers, who can run, who can throw from the pocket, make every throw, throw it from different platforms. So if he's got to lower his arm and throw it, he's got to feather it in, extremely accurate, but great mobility. Can run and extend a play, throw it on the move, but can also run. Now, if you could take all of those skills and you also throw in a Lamar Jackson athletic ability, man, that's, you know, it's definitely perfect. But the passing skills, while good for Lamar, not what Aaron Rodgers is. Still would rather have somebody like that, because the best way to kill a defense is by distributing the ball. It is a lot quicker that you can get the ball from point A to point B passing it than running it. But there are opportunities where when it is covered, man, there's a lot of open grass to pick up ground. You need to be athletic enough to do it. In today's game, you got plenty of ways to be able to run and slide, pick up pivotal yards, and you know you're not going to get hit. If you know how to slide, you're likely not going to get hit. You certainly are not going to get hit if you know how to give yourself up. And, you know, you could stay healthier today. So it is all the more reason. I think in the past, it was more difficult for a running quarterback, because when they consider those guys more runners and they didn't protect them as much, they weren't going to last. And you still got some issues with durability with some quarterbacks. But, you know, the ones that are very skilled at timing and knowing when to take off, when to make positive ground and then get down, that's tough to defend. Man, that is so tough to defend. You've got to keep a spy in. You got to keep a guy in close. That limits a guy in coverage. And if you can quickly find that guy, got to make a defense pay. You know, the whole key of offensive football is to make the defense cover the entire field, spread it out as much as possible. So, and that means maybe running the football out of tight formations, but being able to throw it out of tight formations, being able to run it out of spread sets, being able to throw it out of spread sets, being able to go up tempo and have predetermined reads of where to go with the football, and then being able to throttle the game down and run the football, work the short pass game, and eat clock. I mean, that's ideally what you want to do. And a quarterback that's savvy enough to do it, has great leadership ability, it can do all those things, really can kind of set you apart and make you special. It's one of the reasons why LSU's doing a lot of things in college that are unique to what they've been able to do in the past. It's because of the quarterback. Yeah, it's play calling, it's play design, but none of that works without the quarterback being able to do it. And, you know, I think you're seeing that more and more. And I think we're going to see more and more of those type of guys that can be successful. But those guys that you mentioned just weren't good enough passers, and they weren't developed. A little bit of a different era, even though not that long ago when you think about it, but it's changed a lot since then. Richard asks, he asked me, you worked with Greg Williams before. What was your take on the whole Bountygate situation? And did Sean Payton feel afterward that he got, when he got suspended for the season, he shouldn't have hired Greg Williams? Well, I've got some personal involvement there. I know both of those guys really well, and they certainly knew of one another, but I actually introduced them personally and got Sean to strongly consider Greg. And I both am glad and to some degree regret a little bit of kind of how it played out. But look, I don't think Sean regretted it. They won a Super Bowl. And they don't win a Super Bowl if that defense doesn't create as many turnovers, make as many plays as they did. That was huge. So, no, I don't think he regrets it. I think he's disappointed and frustrated how it played out. Look, you know, Greg is a really good coach, good guy. Greg probably over time has – you know, I knew him when he was a really good young coach. He's always had a, you know, a aggressive approach, and he always had a healthy confidence level, let's say. But it kind of got grown into a different level of, you know, I can say the ego going out of control. And I think it really happened. And I think it was eventually. He gets a head coaching job at Buffalo. He got hired as basically the owner hired him in Washington as kind of an assistant head coach. And he became like, you know, he didn't feel he needed to answer to people. And I think in the case in Washington with Dan Snyder, that was the case. And I think when, in retrospect for me, the one thing I regret is that when Greg went to New Orleans, it was his defense. And Sean was running the offense, the head coach, and he left the defensive guy alone. And he knew that, hey, let's be aggressive, let's attack it. But, you know, Greg is the type that there's a certain way he believes in doing things. And the Bonnie Gate situation was inexcusable because they didn't get fined for Bounty Gate. They got fined for not stopping it. There's some of that that's going around the league. In fact, there was some of it that was going on the league at that time. A couple of other teams, namely the Packers, at the same time was involved in the same thing. When they were called on it by the league, they stopped. And I don't know how many of you have even heard that was going on, but it was. But it stopped. With the Saints, Greg Williams didn't listen to anybody. He thought he was bigger, and I'm going to do it my way, and this is how I do it. And I do think that Sean was probably a little derelict in staying on top of it. I don't know, because I'm not in there. I don't know that if he was not aware of what Greg was telling his team behind closed doors, defense behind closed doors, or if Sean knew it and just go ahead and do what you got to do type. I really don't know that. And there's no way for me to know that because I'm not there. Nowhere, no one knows that. But what I can tell you is that the Saints were warned once, twice, a third time, and they were told the fourth time that that's it. And then after the fourth time, they still ignore the warnings. To me, and again, though I like both and are friends with both, I thought their arrogance, both, or in the case of Sean, arrogance combined with maybe just focusing so much on what he was running with the offense, maybe it led to them feeling that they were bigger than the game. And I can tell you, talking with Sean, he never dreamed he was going to get suspended. It was their fault. People in state of Louisiana still got it out for the league and feel it was wrong and all that. No, they were warned, as I said, four times. If you get warned one time, that should be enough. Second, damn sure should be enough. A third time is more than you deserve. A fourth is ridiculous. And whether it's in any form of business or life, you don't get that many chances. So they got fined heavily and kind of banned from the league for a while because they ignored it. They were responsible. You know, the general manager is kind of not a power guy and didn't have a lot of say. So the owner at the time, Tom Benson, I mean, he was not, like, Tom's not really, wasn't really there day to day, God rest his soul. And I think they all let everybody down. I mean, I think they all got what they deserved because they didn't. It wasn't like the league was pointing them out. The league warned them and gave them, listen, probably two more chances than I would have given them. And I told them that. So, I feel bad that it ended bad. But look, for Sean, it is the head coach, you got to be on top of it. Or if you were on top of it and you allowed it to go, then in either case, you were culpable. You were absolutely culpable. And so may not be popular, but they absolutely got what they deserved there. Richard also asks, what were your scouting evaluations of Peyton Manning out of Tennessee? Listen, I'm a big believer in quarterbacks that have leadership, intangibles, accuracy, see the field, love the game, live the game. So I had a really good grade on it. You know, it's ironic, and, you know, a lot of people say that as a definite. Most people, okay, more than 50% thought Peyton Manning was inferior to Ryan Leaf. So I laugh on the whole, you know, most people did. No one admits it now, but they did. The physical stature, and it's why I always say, you look at the intangibles, you look at the leadership, but, you know, you have to have the physical skills. But the intangibles are misunderstood, overlooked, misevaluated more very often. Peyton Manning was really, really good. Jake Plummer, you ask, out of Arizona State. Like Jake, probably a little bit too high on him. He wasn't quite as accurate. He had success. Look, he got a nice big contract. He flamed out a little bit. I think the talent around him hurt him. A little bit some health issues as well. Laurie Malloy out of Michigan. How did I grade him? Big physical safety that could come down, defend the run. Really big over the middle. It was truly more in the age of strong safety, free safety. Whereas now they're a little bit more interchangeable. Better in the box, but a little bit underrated as a safety. So had good grades on all three of them. Worked out really well. Appreciate the questions. A reminder again, if you've got a question, go to LandryFootball.com, send it to me, and I will address it here on this podcast, wherever you want me to. Say, so listen, as we wrap up, what we're going to be focusing on this weekend is on Saturday, Georgia, Auburn, Minnesota, Iowa, Oklahoma, Baylor. Of course, we'll be watching all the games. In the different windows. But those are the prime games. Indiana, Penn State's underrated. Florida, Missouri, I don't know how good of a game, but going to be intrigued. Going to see how badly Ohio State and Clemson wins. Texas, Iowa State. Memphis, Houston. Virginia Tech needs to stay on pace in the Coastal, Georgia Tech. See, LSU comes off of playing number one and Ole Miss on the road. A lot of emotion there. South Carolina A&M, who can run the football the best? Can UCLA give Utah anything on the road? USC Cal, a lot of interesting things here this weekend. But Georgia Auburn is where it's at. Favor Auburn, Georgia in this game. I think Minnesota can go on the road and beat Iowa. Going to be tough, though. Going to be a real intriguing game. Don't like Baylor's chances at home against Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma needs to make a big statement here. On Sunday, well, first of all, Thursday night, Pittsburgh-Cleveland. There's your good one. Interesting to be able to look at that and see, you know, Browns are right now dug themselves such a hole that one more loss, I mean, they're looking right now. At this point, if they were to win out, they would end up 10-6. I think most thought they'd at least be that. So we're talking 9-7 with a loss at best, 8-8. They're staring down the gun barrel of a disappointing season and potentially some changes at the head coach, depending on how things play out. Pittsburgh, anybody still want to foolishly question Mike Tomlin's ability to coach and lead? Give me a break. What a job he's doing. That's going to be interesting. Can Dallas get back on track? Can Buffalo figure out some offense? Can the Saints get back on track in Tampa? Houston-Baltimore is the biggest game of the weekend in the NFL. Houston could take over second seed with a win. Baltimore could really kind of distance themselves and get a little bit closer to New England with a win. Speaking of New England, they go to Philadelphia. The right combinations could start to separate a little bit. Kansas City trying to hold things off in the AFC West, where things are kind of unraveling a little bit. So a lot to be determined. Going to be a lot of fun this weekend. We appreciate you joining us. Enjoy the football games this weekend. We talked a little bit in a couple of other forums about the playoff rankings. I'll end with this. What the playoff rankings said to me was that Georgia and Alabama right now, they've got a lead, and the only contender that they have is of the Pac-12. And I do think if Georgia wins out, they're in with LSU. And Alabama gets in if Georgia loses. Now, that's not even bringing in the possibility that Ohio State or Clemson might lose. If they were to lose, then it opens up some other possibilities. But right now, the race is, can the Pac-12 catch an Alabama? And can a Big 12 catch the Pac-12? Because right now, they're behind. So don't overreact to the rankings at this point. A lot of football left. We will break it down for you. As well, right here, as well as at LandryFootball.com. Check out all the film room breakdowns of all the NFL games this weekend, all the college games organized by conference. We got it for you. The film room breakdowns going into the games, breaking down the games after they're played. One-stop shopping football over at LandryFootball.com. Take advantage of our season sale, in-season sale, 50% off. Look, it's $9.99 a month. If you take advantage of the one-year offer, it's $4.99 a month. Think about it. You can get access to your own coaching and scouting department and be an owner, so to speak, for less than a magazine subscription. Take advantage of that today. You won't regret it. During the season, off season, we've got it all covered for you. Appreciate you joining us. Talk to you next time on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at Landry Football. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.